tea time. Yeah. Making a difference. One cup at a time. Tea time. So be sure to grab your tea, grab a seat, and tune in to Miss Liz. Tea time. Making a difference. One cup at a time. Tea time. Yeah.
Welcome everybody to Tea Time. That's right. It is a Monday. And yes, Miss Liz is here with the last Tea Time of 2023. I can't believe that we're already at the end of this year. And I have the incredible Diane Name in studio with me. And we're going to be talking about her book and a bunch of other things. So grab your tea, grab your coffee, grab your juice, water. You do not have to drink tea to enjoy Tea Time with Miss Liz. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, please do so now. We have a reunion show coming up on Thursday where there'll be almost 100 guests returning, 18 countries. We're doing it big this year, and we're going to celebrate all of these incredible guests from all different seasons. So season 1, 2, 3, and 4. So Miss Liz is going big this year. And then we'll be joining back in January for the first Tea Time. And that will be going out in the press releases the end of December. So look out for that as well. But a little bit on my guest today. And disclaimer for the last time of 2023. And then we're going to get Diane in here. And we're going to have a good different kind of tea today with all of you guys out there. Disclaimer for Miss Liz's Tea Time live show. Miss Liz, myself, is going live using StreamYard. Before leaving a comment, please grant StreamYard permission to see your name at StreamYard.com. Please be advised that the content brought forward for any Tea Time show hosted by myself, Miss Liz, is always brought forward in good faith, however may bring forward dialogues and opinions that are not representative of my platform. The facts and information are perceived to be accurate at the given time of airing. All Tea Time guests and audience participants are responsible for using their good judgment in taking any action that may relate to the discussion. The content brought forward may include discussions for some where they may be emotionally at risk. It is significant to know that this show is engaging in discussion forums only to offer and inspire awareness and connection and is not providing therapeutical advice. If you have any questions about the disclaimer or the panelist discussion, you may freely contact me, Miss Liz, through my email at bookingmissliz@gmail.com. Moving forward, should you choose to voluntarily participate in today's show in any aspect, I myself, Miss Liz, welcomes you. And should you feel that this show is not made for you at this time, I respect those wishes and will see you at a later show at a later date and time. And that will be next year. You'll be able to see all of those incredible new shows. So now a little bit on my guest. Before I get her in here, I'm just going to read a little bit of her bio and then I'll get you to check out her full bio on Miss Liz's Facebook page. So Diane Name is a talented author of over 65 published books, including children, YA, and adult nonfiction books. She is also an award-winning screenwriter, director, and producer for films, television, and a successful playwright, director, and producer for stage. Her newest book, Lake Keys and Left Seas. I don't think I'm saying it right, so I'm going to get her to say because I don't want her grandkids are upset. Is a children's book about embracing different cultures within one family. A dedicated advocate of literacy, Name is the founder and executive artistic director of West of Broadway, which we'll be talking about today, formerly a 501(c)(3) nonprofit organization and a grant recipient of the LA County Performing Arts Council. Name and West of Broadway promotes literacy and social and civic responsibilities through stage. Past productions have included originals, adaptions by name, Mrs. Scrooge, the musical, Huck, Bunny, Tales, episode, I think it's 4 or 5. I always get those letters mixed up. The Bunny Wars, Red Chief, Monster, and classic productions of 12 Angry Jurors and Judgment of Nuremberg. Names, productions, companies, Ladies of the Canyons, All Media LLC, has developed a number of projects. Film, TV projects include Finding Hope, The Sacrifice, Telemafa, Great American Pigeon Race, We're Always Have Dingle, and Sasa. We're going to talk about all of that. We're going to get her in, and I'm going to grab some tea. So let me get Diane in here. Hi, Diane. And I know I said it wrong, so I'm going to get you to fix it because I don't want those little ones upset with Miss Liz.
Hi. Well, thank you for having me here. It's lovely to meet with you, and it's lovely just to speak with you. And the name of the book is Latkes and Lefse.
Latkes and Lefse. And we even practiced it in the back, and I was like, oh, my goodness, I'm going to forget.
It's okay. You are not alone. Lots of people say it lots of different ways.
And we don't want the little ones upset. So we're going to make sure that we keep saying it right. Diane, it is a pleasure to have you here. And I am so glad that I'm wrapping up season 4 with you, because the book is about tradition and culture and that as well in the festive season. And that's what time it is, right?
It definitely.
So I think it's just perfect timing for you to come and sit and have tea with me. So I'm going to start off how I start off all of the tea times. Who was Diane as a little girl, and who is Diane now?
You know, I'm not that much different.
And I like that answer, because when people say that, I'm just like, nope, I like it when you say that.
You know, I can drive now, and there are more wrinkles. But I think essentially I'm the same person. You know, I'm the person who spends most of the, reads, you know, way into the night, way past the times I should. I'm the person who loves writing more than I do all the other things that I have had the privilege of being able to do. And, you know, storytelling in a way that matters, I think is something that I have always cared about. And, I've just been able to manifest that in a variety of different ways, very luckily, and with no straight line to getting there. But that's who I was then, and that's who I am now, and that's probably who I'll be in, until the end.
So, Diane, what got you into writing?
Well, the thing that I loved the most when I was growing up was the ability to read. I learned early, because my mother was having a second child and she really wanted me to be able to read by myself. So she taught me at a very young age. And so I was just voracious, and we had books everywhere in the house. So I just voraciously read everything and anything that came my way. And then it just seemed like writing was the natural extension of being that absorbed in reading. I mean, I took in as much as I possibly could from as many of the different writers that I was reading. And then it just became something that was a natural extension. It was the subject I loved most when I was at school. And when I graduated college, I decided that working for a publisher as an editor was the closest thing I could get to being a reader and a writer. And then children's book publishing was the thing that accepted me first. And so that's the direction I went.
And we talked about this before we went live about children's books and the impact that they bring to the table, right?
Yes, I think without question. And as we discussed before, I really think that successful children's books have to appeal on two levels. One, to the adult who will be reading it to the child multiple times, and the child who has to see him or herself in the story in order to feel part of what's happening and to be proud of themselves while they're participating in that story in their mind. I personally started out with the Nancy Drew books. I decided.
Oh my God, that's going like way back. Like memories. I was like, oh yeah, I used to read those.
Right. And the first versions, you know, not the ones that, yeah, that they've adapted since, but the first versions of Nancy Drew, those were the things I loved the most. I would spend all night reading them. And then my first job out of college was at Grosset and Dunlap, who happened to be the publishers of the Nancy Drew books. And so I got to actually be an assistant to the editor who was editing the Nancy Drew books. And I was just like, that just seemed very appropriate.
That is really cool, right? That's like a dream come true. Like,
it was actually.
I like what you said, Diane. You said that, you know, you had to, when reading the children's books, the adults have to feel it and the children have to feel it so that they're in the story, right? It's almost like what you do with your screenwriting and all of that as well. You got to make the characters feel like they're in the story. And you do a lot of production and directing as well. So how do you get the actors and staff and all that engaged in your work?
You know, I was really fortunate that based on the scripts that they would read, the actors who kind of attach themselves to the projects were all of a quality that I could only hope for, given that I was very much a novice director at the time. And, you know, there's a give and take between director and actor. And I have to sort of leave the writer behind because, you know, the writing is the initial impetus for a character. But the evolution of that character is really between the actor and the director. And I was just fortunate enough to have actors at every stage for both the plays and the films who brought something just really multifaceted to each of the characters that I created. And I must say that for the stage plays, the most fun was watching the audiences, because it was mainly children who were in the audience. And because it was interactive, they all get to throw things as part of the show.
Oh, so like back in the 50s when they used to throw things and Charlie Chaplin got
them. Exactly, but intentionally. For instance, in The Bunny Wars, which is an adaptation of Peter Rabbit, you know, in order to save Peter from the villainous Farmer McGregor, the kids get to throw, and I used to have them made specially, those soft foam vegetables at the farmer so that they could vanquish him.
Wow.
And the same thing is true in Mrs. Scrooge as well, where they vanquish the ghost of Christmas Future because he's the bad guy, with snowballs because it's a Christmas Carol adaptation. And so even the adults really like that. But to watch the children's faces as they were absorbed from the first moment of the story until the end when they get to participate as part of the hero, it was really great. I mean, there's just really nothing like it. It's as if I got to sit with the people who read the stories that I write and watch their reaction, which is also really great whenever I get to do that too.
I like that you said that, Diane, because you know when you read a children's book, you're doing that. Oh no, what's next? Who's coming? You know, I know when I read to my granddaughter, I do that. Like I put the, oh no, let's turn the page.
Exactly, it's an adventure each time.
Yeah, and I think it really makes it more engaging too and entertaining when you get into the roles, right? And I like that you did that, like tossing vegetables and snowballs. And, you know, it gets the children involved, so they're not just sitting and watching. They're actually involved, and I like that, the involvement.
Yeah, no, it was great.
So let's talk about this book. I want to say the Latkes.
And Lefse.
And Lefse. So let's talk about the Latkes and Lefse and how that got started and how you got the name.
Well, as you may or may not know, latkes are a traditional Hanukkah food. They're fried potato pancakes, and they're fried in oil, which symbolizes the 8 days that the oil lasted in the Hanukkah story.
Oh.
Lefse is a Norwegian pastry that has evolved over the years since the Vikings. They served it first as kind of a flatbread, and then it became a potato crepe, and then it became kind of like a dessert type thing. It depends on how you want to serve it, because it has a variety of options. And the latkes, you serve them on Hanukkah with either sour cream or applesauce or just by themselves, either way. And my daughter was accumulating recipes for a multicultural recipe book that her children's school was assembling. And she said, "Mom, can I have your latkes recipe? And I'm going to ask my mother-in-law for her lefse recipe." And I said, "Oh, latkes and lefse. That's a great book title." And then I decided I would write one. So
that's really how it came about. I like when there's a story behind why the titles come, right? And I am so surprised because my grandma was from Norway. All our heritage is in Norway. And here we are having Norwegian food served. So grandma's in the house and she's saying, like, enjoy this, you know? And I just learned something new. It's almost like a fry bread, Diane?
It's, I think it started out as a flat bread because it was an easy thing to bake and take with you on trips, you know, journeys and ships and sailing and stuff like that. But the way it evolved is that potato is used instead of flour when you want to make it for holidays. And so it becomes like a thin potato crepe that then you roll up and you serve with butter and sugar, which my grandchildren tell me is the best part. And there are recipes in the book, latkes in the beginning of the story and lefse at the end. So that anyone who's interested can make it for themselves if they want to.
Oh, well, that's really cool. You even got a cookbook at the end of this book. As you were saying that, sprinkling the sugar, I remember my grandma giving us that as a treat during the holidays. And I just never knew the name of it. As soon as you were describing it, I was like, oh, that's what that is. So,
yep.
And you know, and I love when
wait
people
all year for it.
Right. And I love when people write stories and they bring the heritage back. They bring back recipes from the lands, the different lands, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that at Christmas time we get to know different cultures and traditions and stuff like that. How we say Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, you know, Joy and Noel. We say all of the different kinds of holiday seasons, right? So how do you say Merry Christmas in Norwegian? Do you know?
I don't know that, but the whole point of the story is that you celebrate, all of us celebrate holidays, and we celebrate them so similarly, not differently. We celebrate them by coming together as families, by making special foods, by creating memories of those special foods and the family gatherings to commemorate the holidays so that when someone isn't with us any longer, we remember them at that time and it's an ongoing memory. And I guess what I wanted to stress the most about the holidays is that we are all so similar and we have so much common ground and that the specifics of which holiday it is and why we celebrate it are not the things that divide us, but that the fact that we celebrate and the ways that we celebrate are the things that we have in common.
I love that. You know, bringing people together, that's just a cup of tea, right? That's just how we serve tea.
Exactly.
Diane, I'm going to get into your tea because that's where I feel my Oma is saying, oh, no, it's time to get her tea. So if I give you the letters TEA, what three words would you give me today?
I think the first letter, T, would be time. The time spent with family, the time spent doing things for family, giving of your own time is one of the most precious gifts you can give anyone in your family and anyone you love or anyone that you advocate for, because time is what's precious. So that's my T word.
That's your T word.
My E word is eventful. I think it's important that you create events with the people you love so that, again, they have a way of both responding to you, reacting with you, and remembering you. I think to say, and it doesn't have to be like a big production event. It just has to be an event that's memorable to the people involved. So I would say eventful is something that matters to me. And then the last, the A word, is both advocacy and artistry. I think that for me, I've put them both together. I advocate for the things that I think are important, and I use my artistry to do that. It's always mattered to me to tell stories that matter to kids, that matter to adults, that matter to people in trouble. Those are the things that I care about. So that's my TEA.
I love it. I love your TV. You know, especially at this time of year, you know, creating events, like you said, it doesn't matter what the big production and all that is and who has the biggest tree and who does the best cookies and all. You know, it's about just the gathering, bringing people together and just celebrating what you've got to learn over the year and, you know, just seeing people smiling and enjoying together. So was family gatherings a big thing for you growing up, Diane?
You know, my grandmother and grandfather lived only a few blocks away, and they spent a lot of time watching us because my mother was working most of the time, as was my father. And my extended family of my father's was also a few blocks away. They all grew up around in the same circle. And so every weekend and all the holidays was always spent having dinner at someone's house, or usually my grandmother's, but not always, sometimes my aunt's. And every Sunday was spent playing ping pong with my cousins and my uncles, and they were very competitive people. So I learned to play ping pong really well. So yes, I think that I spent a lot of time with extended family. And I think that that's lucky. I think a lot of people don't live near their families and they don't get to do things like that. Luckily, I feel connected to my grandchildren that way and to my two grown children. And we are all in enough proximity that we get to see each other fairly often. So that's what I think matters.
Well, you know, it's the gathering, right? We seem to forget about how important gatherings are and just connecting and having a cup of tea and having a coffee and having that conversation. You know, need to bring that back. We need to bring these traditions and gatherings back together where it's just having a good old conversation like we're having right now. You know,
okay.
Diane, I've done some work and some research on you, like I do with all my guests. And I am really impressed with all of the work that you have done for women. You've brought a really good, strong voice for women. Do you want to share a little bit about all the incredible work that you're doing? I want to get onto the one, the West of Broadway first, and then we're going to jump into the Ladies of the Canyon. I want to talk about those two different production and layout services that you provide.
So West of Broadway was actually created, it was an outgrowth of juvenile writing mentorship program that I worked with. I volunteered as a writing instructor at a couple of juvenile detention facilities and teen drug rehab centers at Phoenix House and at Camp David Gonzalez. And so both of those experiences led me to realize that while I was teaching writing and that the kids really enjoyed our sessions, a lot of the references that I made to children's literature of things that I just took for granted as things to have read, they hadn't read it and they didn't know anything about them. Like the Beatrix Potter's Beatrix Potter story of Peter Rabbit, and like Mark Twain stories, and even the Christmas Carol. It was just stuff that they didn't, it didn't register for them. So I decided that the best way to change that in the greater Los Angeles area would be to create a theater company west of Broadway, because we are so very west of Broadway, and to adapt the stories to an interactive modern version, so that, and the programs would always provide the original story, but that this way it would engage young children in the greater Los Angeles area. And most of my performances were performed pro bono and for large groups of students in different centers around Los Angeles. Just for them to become familiar with those stories, because I loved those stories and my kids loved those stories when we were growing up and when they were growing up. And I just wanted to share that. And so that was a rather successful, I thought, for the time that I was doing that. I haven't done that in a few years because there was the pandemic and things got things got more challenging. I'm thinking of reprising Mrs. Scrooge, the musical, at some point. And so we'll see how that goes. But that was where that came from, is that I wanted to share the things that had mattered to me when I was reading as a kid, with kids who were not getting to hear those stories and not getting to know about those stories or those authors, because I would find and I would get letters from instructors and educators to tell me that not only did they go back and read the original in their classrooms, but then the kids took out books that had to do with those other, you know, had to do with the authors that they'd written. So there was a way of expanding their interest in those authors and the classics that hadn't existed before, because I always make the author one of the characters in the story, and they felt they'd met the author. And so they wanted to read more by the author in order to sort of expand their literary, you know, exposure. So it was great.
Well, I think that's really, it opens the doors of understanding literacy, because not everybody learns to read and write because they don't have the funding to go to school. They don't have the proper engagement in classes. You know, they're usually in the back of the classroom, so they're not, you know, asking those questions, or maybe they aren't seen. I think what you're doing is really incredible. And I love that it's pro bono, because not everything needs to have a ticket's price to it to make a difference. You know, we really need to start opening up where we can give our talents and our traits to others at no cost, and open that door of opportunity for them to engage themselves more. Like you said, Diane, they started reading other books, and, you know, it opened up the mind.
And as I said, they thought they met the author. So I thought that was a real tribute to the actors who played the authors. And I did receive, you know, grants from the LA Council of Performing Arts. So I was able to cover the costs of the performances and the productions with a bunch of the money that came from that.
Well, and I think that's really important that you say that, Diane, because, you know, there are grants and fundings out there for profits like this, nonprofits, you know. It's to get the message out there. And I really like that you use storytelling to get it out there. And especially with children. Like I have this vision of throwing foam veggies at the stage. And I'm like, I would like to be there. Like I could use some of that right now, you know?
Well, should we redo Mrs. Scrooge? I'll let you know when the performances are, and you can throw snowballs at the ghost Absolutely. Of Christmas future.
That's my goal too, right? Is to meet all of my guests. Like, I'd like to travel and see where you guys all are and see you in person, you know, have sure. that gathering and have that connection together. Because a screen is nice, but connection in person is also nice.
I agree with that.
So with this book, Diane, is it in schools? Is it in libraries? Where can they find this book?
Well, it's in bookstores, certainly Barnes & Noble, who has published my other books, has that available. You can buy it through my website at dianenam.com. You can buy it through BookBaby. tea-time.com. And you can also go to, it has its own website because I thought it deserved one. So it's latkesandlefse.com and you can buy it there. It's a really good holiday. It's a good holiday story. It's a feel-good story for the kids. And as I said, it has those recipes, so you can always make them with your children as well.
Right? And that's a good time at the holidays, like baking cookies and baking the cakes and breads mm-hmm. and all that. You know, it's good communication time as well. Get to know what happened during the year, you know?
Yeah.
So are these recipes like at the end of the book, Diane?
Well, I use them one in the front because latkes comes first and then lefse comes second. And so it's at the end of the book. And the really great thing about the story is that the arbitrary restriction that the children are given, that they have to bring only one food and only celebrate one holiday for their multicultural dinner, is something that the kids just simply would not tolerate, because that's not how they live their lives. They celebrate lots of things and they celebrate both of their cultures, and they could not choose and would not choose. It's not a true story, by the way, but I'm just telling you that that's the story.
It should be.
That's the story I created. And so the fact that the children find a solution that both satisfies the restriction they were given but expands the holiday celebration and embracing of their two heritages is, I think, what a lot of children find attractive about the story. I have a friend whose granddaughter has memorized the book, and then she sent me a video of her reading the book by heart.
Wow.
And she really enjoys it because she really likes the way they figured out how to get around that restriction.
I like it that it should be a true story. Like, you know, we shouldn't have to choose. You know, somebody wants to bring a pie and somebody wants to bring a cake, bring both. Like, the more the merrier.
Well, that was what we decided.
So how long did it take you to write this book, Diane?
You know, the first draft of a book for children for me always comes all at once. And then I spend months revising it and reworking it. And then once I involve the illustrator, and the editor, because I actually did use one of the editors who had published my books at Sterling Books became an independent editor. And so she was kind enough to take my project on. And so I worked with her once I'd finished my part, and she and the illustrator worked together, revising things just to make sure that everything worked the way it was supposed to. So to answer your question, which was the long way around, it took a while. I wrote it all at once, and then it took a while to rewrite it and revise it until it became the story it is now.
I think it's important for the listeners to know that a book, you know, you can put a book together in 30 minutes, but do you really want it in 30 minutes, or do you want to take the time and give you something really good and productive, right? It's like a screenplay and a film. You know, you don't want to do it in 10 minutes. You want to take the time to really go through it and process it. So do you see any future things happening with this book, like maybe a little children's Christmas play or...
You know, you never know. I mean, I'm certainly not going to say no, but we'll see. I mean, at the moment, I'm just enjoying the fact that it's it being a holiday book and it being a book that my grandchildren are still willing to read. I'm enjoying that part of it. Whether anything else comes of it, we'll see.
Well, you just never know, right?
You never know.
I always look forward to these children books always making little series. I'm just like, no, I want to be able to say, I know who made that.
Well, I do think there's something to that. That's for sure. You know, who knows? As I told you before, I've developed a second book that I'm currently having illustrated, working with yet another really elegant editor. and another really wonderful illustrator. You know, Allie Bryden was the editor on Lotkas and Lefse, and Maria Hescher was the illustrator, and they were perfect for that book. It couldn't have been the book it is without them. And I think that my upcoming book has the same sort of team, even though it's different people, and it will be the book that it will become because of their involvement. So I think I'm going to concentrate on just the next book at the moment and see what happens after that.
So, Diane, are you working on the next book?
Yes. Well, I wrote it, and then Simone Kaplan she's also a professional editor, agreed to be the editor. And so she and the art director and the illustrator are working on the sketches right now. So it should be out in the next few months or so.
Oh, well, we'll have to pay attention for that. And you'll have to let me know when it comes out so I can put that as an update for all the viewers and listeners out there.
I will, for sure.
I like to keep my listeners engaged, and I say, oh, guess what? There's an update. There's a new program. There's a new book. There's a new service. Check it out. Like, do your Christmas shopping, you know, Christmas time. Grab a book, you know, and put it with some pajamas.
That's a good idea.
You know, we have one guest that was on Tea Time a couple months ago, Zane Carson, and she got her children's books put into pajamas. So you just never know where it goes, right?
So, you know, that's a good idea. Maybe I should, for next year, do Lotkas and Lefse pajamas.
Right? I think that would be really cool. Like, reading the books and pajamas, I thought that was awesome, you know, and I love connecting. And that's what we're going to be doing on the reunion show, is connecting people. So if you guys have children's books and you want to see what options you can bring your book the next level, right? Sometimes it's not about a series or a movie. It's maybe about pajamas. Maybe it's about a cookbook. Maybe,
no, I love that idea. I think the pajamas idea is fantastic.
I think it's cool. And I think the characters on the book would make awesome little characters on pajamas, right? Like, on the front. Like, yeah. And then you could put like all these little cakes and cookies and, you know, like.
Yeah, no, it's a good idea.
Storytelling on pajamas. With Miss Liz. You just never know where Miss Liz is going to go next. I'm going to get all my children's authors to collaborate, and we're going to make a pajama series. Like, I think it would be really cool.
I do too.
Yeah. Diane, I want to get into the Ladies of the Canyon, because I like the name of it, because the canyons are like really deep in empowerment. So how did you get the name of that? Like, how did you come up with that?
So it's actually Lady of the Canyon, and I live on a canyon. And so I also love the Joni Mitchell song, which you're saying the title of, Ladies of the Canyon. And so I just changed it to make sure that it's Lady of the Canyon. And I just felt that it was indicative of the type of work that I wanted to do as a filmmaker. So that's the production company name that I came up with. And since a lot of the Lady of the Canyon stuff is about stories that matter, either events that have transpired that I was familiar with based on my work at the Phoenix House Rehab Center, and based on events that have happened in the real world to people that I became acquainted with and then followed their stories, I just thought Lady of the Canyon was the right imprimatur for that particular advocacy element of storytelling.
I think it's just empowering. The word canyon, you know, we look at words and we're like, oh, we see this image. But when we open up the mind, we can actually see what it actually offers us, right? And it's like a story. What does it offer us? What does it give us? Where does it take us? How does it make us feel? You know, it's all those questions, what, where, when, how, you know? So when you're writing your books and that, Diane, do you get that feeling like, where am I going with this? How am I doing this? Like,
oh, sure. I mean, I write different things differently, if that makes sense. As I said, the children's stuff kind of comes all at once to me, and then it's a function of revising. the more adult-oriented things, like the films, that takes time because I'll have a plan and an outline and a as they say, a roadmap to what the story should be. But then, you know, something will happen either in the world or in the story or to a character, or a character sort of becomes more important at the time. And I'll suddenly change direction. And then it will be a function of, you know, getting to the end of that first draft and then going back and making sure that all the pieces work with each other. So I write differently for different formats and different subjects also.
So Diane, I want to talk about this Create Now. Is that like a platform or is that like a community? What is Create Now?
Create Now is an organization, a mentoring at-risk youth organization created by a really spectacular person named Jill Gurr. And she's just the hardworkingest person. And she has gathered together the possibilities for kids who are at risk and kids who are in detention facilities and in rehab centers. And what she's done is just provide them with remarkable opportunities. My writing workshop was just one of the gazillions of opportunities she provides these kids with. She connects them with people in different industries and gets them to go to certain types of sporting events and, you know, and movie events and things where they would ordinarily never get to do. And just sort of broadens their horizons in a way that makes them recognize that they can see themselves doing things that they would ordinarily not think were for them. And she's just, as I said, the most hardworking person in this respect. She doesn't stop for a second. And any connection she can make and any groups whose lives she can either create an adventure or an event or an education for, she does. And so I was very privileged to be part of that for a while. And she's just a really amazing person.
So we have a question here for you, Diane. Is Create Now only in the United States?
I think that Jill, it's a United States organization. I think that if Jill had the opportunity to expand it internationally, she might. But it's not that, not, I'm not aware of any international reach right now, but I don't think that it's out of the question for her. She could do anything.
So Diane, do you work a lot with the detention centers and youth rehabs?
I haven't in a long time, but I did initially. That was, as I said, the reason why I created West of Broadway. And then as a fundraiser for Create Now and for the and for the kids involved in the program, I did something, I did a play performance called LA Streets Scenes, which was based on a lot of the workshopping that we had done of their scenes. Because when I was a mentor there, what I did was ask the kids to write something for me in the course of the time that I was there. And then I adapted it for them into a play. Or actually into a full scene, and then basically created a composite of all of their scenes that made sense in a narrative. And then we used that as a way of raising funds for them by doing two or three performances a year. And then when I had new scenes to add, we added those in or created a new narrative. And we did that for about 3 years in a row. I haven't been back. But that was what projected me into theater. Other than the fact that I love theater myself, it was just a way of creating an even greater involvement for the kids, not only in storytelling, but in seeing their words performed in front of them, which is a very powerful experience. I think most of them had never had that experience. And I think that gave them a tremendous amount of motivation to continue to keep writing. In fact, one of the boys who had the most heart-wrenching story I think I've ever heard went on to become awarded the 2009 Youth writing award by Barbara Bush when he had taken his story and fleshed it out and made it an even more significant prose narrative. And he was with the White House.
Wow.
And he was at the White House and he met the president and he met the first lady. And, you know, it just, I think what it did was show that you can sort of take a spark of something and it can really take you farther than you'd ever thought you could go. And I think that was his experience.
Well, I think storytelling opens up doors that, you know, sometimes even amazes us. By sharing our story, we're actually healing and opening doors for others.
And that was, I think, what happens with them is that I think they all told the stories that mattered to them. And somehow, not in every case, but somehow in many of the cases, I think it helped them move forward. At least I like to think it did.
So have you done any theater work for yourself? Like, have you ever done any acting or?
No, I don't act. I mean, the only movie that I allowed myself to be in was We'll Always Have Dingle. And I have no, and only because the director needed like an extra people in the film for one or two scenes. And only because we needed a voiceover for something that we had not had the audio for. But generally, I'm a behind the camera person.
I'm behind the camera. So I had found something online here and I want to talk to you about it. It was the First Readers Children's Press Spring 2004. What was that about?
Were you talking about the readers that are the restricted vocabulary? Is it like Little Bear?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, so Little Bear and Monster. And that was a series that at the time I was working as a book producer with a friend of mine. And I was both the editor and I wrote some of them myself. And so the concept was a restricted vocabulary with repetition and pictures that correlated or corresponded to the vocabulary. So that essentially in a 16 vocabulary word story, like Little Bear, a child after reading it once or twice would both recognize the words, remember the story, and have the feeling and sense of pride of reading it in a shortcutted sort of way. I'm not in any way pretending that that's methodology of teaching reading substitutes for phonics or for sight and memory and anything else. Yeah. But this restricted vocabulary principle was the basis for the series. And then we did several that were 16 words and that were repeated and others that were 24 and then 32 and then 48. And so it is true that once a child remembered the story and was able to, from the illustration cues, as well as remembering the vocabulary, felt that they had read the book, it just gave them a lot more encouragement to continue to their reading journey. And it could happen in a very young age for children. And I think that that was just a way of motivating people to then go on and learn to read for real.
Well, I think, man, a lot of your books are about repetition, right? Because like you said, the little girl memorized your book and sent you a video. So you
I didn't expect anyone to memorize Latkes and Lefse. She's just a very smart little girl.
So what age group is your books based on, Diane?
Well, the most recent one is, I think, ages 4 and up. I think if you can have it read to you, I mean, even 2-year-olds would be able to read, to hear it. But a lot of the books had specific age ranges when they were first readers. So a lot of the Disney series books that I did, a lot of the first readers books that I did, they have age ranges from like 4 to 8, 2 to 6, just depends on how the publisher wanted to position it for, you know, for the marketing purposes.
So, Diane, do you remember what your very first book was?
The very first book I read? I'll be honest, I don't remember the first book. I do remember that the books that I remember as first are things like Greek mythology. I just love those books. And I took out every library book about Greek mythology that I could find when I was a kid and I was allowed to go to the library.
So what was it?
So I think my grandparents started taking me to the library and my mother also, like when I was like five. Oh. And I just took as many of the Greek myths. I just loved all the Greek myths. So when Sterling Books asked me to write an adaptation of their classic series for Greek myths and Roman myths, I was like, sign me up. I'd love to do that. But those are the things that Nancy Drew. I mean, those were the first
that
ones.
Brings back like good memories. I used to read the books and my grandma and grandpa used to always tell me, turn lights off. And I'd be like, just one more chapter, please. Right. Just one more page. And then exactly. My grandma would always say, okay, one more page. But then it's lights out.
No, well, there's an image of in Latkes and Lefse of one of the main characters, Josh, with a flashlight under his covers reading a story. And I think that's pretty much sums up my childhood, is that I spent a lot of time under the covers with a flashlight reading a story.
Right at nighttime, supposed to be sleeping, but the book is so good.
Right.
So where would you like to see this book in the next 5 years, Diane?
Everybody's house.
There we go.
That's what I would like. I'd like everybody to have one, because I think that not only would they then be producing latkes and lefse for themselves, but I think it would give everybody the understanding that, as I said in the beginning, we just have more in common than we have things that make us different. Yeah. And that's what the holidays should demonstrate.
And I love this comment that Stephen left. You know, many flashlight batteries were used for under the blanket readings. I think that we need to bring the flashlights back, right? Like, I start reading books under the blanket.
Well, to be honest, I still have one. I always have one nearby.
I like to do that with my little granddaughter. Like, just cover up, you know, go in the tent, make the little forts, and, you know, on the tables, your chairs and table, and make a nice tent and just.
It's true.
So, Diane, what is going to be your favorite time of this season with your family this year?
Well, we are supposed to go see Dog Man, the musical, next week. And I'm very excited about that because the kids love the Dog Man books. And I haven't seen the musical, so I don't know. I'm going to be as surprised as they are about whatever happens on stage. And to me, I mean, as I said, I have always loved the theater. I think I went to the theater when I was 12 and thought, wow, this is the most awesome form of entertainment on the planet. And previously, I just thought reading was. Yeah. And it just gives me such pleasure for them to see a show where they will have a response. That's what I love, is to take them to places and things and watch their reactions.
So, Diane, what was your first musical you seen?
I think the first musical I saw was 1776 in Radio City Music Hall.
Oh, wow.
Which I'm sure dates me, but that's.
We're not giving dates away. Ages.
Right. But that was it. My grandfather took me for my birthday, and I don't remember how old I was, but I remember thinking, wow, that is really awesome.
We have another comment here for you, Diane. Make a musical out of your books.
Well, you know, I did Mrs. Scrooge the musical. And as I said, I might be bringing it back. Just depends on whether I have the time, ability, and there's an interest to do it. But thank you. I would love to do that. And I'll let you know if Mrs. Scrooge makes it, makes a comeback.
And he says, one of my favorites is Mr. Adams.
Really? Well, that's great.
So Diane, we're going to wrap it up. This is the last show of 2023. I can't believe that we're already here. We got less than 5 minutes left of 2023 with tea time. If you haven't subscribed to the channel, do that. Diane, if anybody would like to reach you, how can they contact you?
Through theladyofthecanyon.com. You can reach me at dnam@ladyofthecanyon.com. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook. That's pretty much it.
So
I'm not a big social media person, but I do have a Facebook page and I do have a LinkedIn page.
So Diane, I want to wrap it up this year for 2023. What's your favorite color? You gave me purple. So why purple?
I don't know. I just think purple is the best color. It's just, there's something so, it has a smell, it has a taste. It's just a great color. And I think it's also my granddaughter's favorite color. So I like to have the same color as favorite as hers.
Well, thank you, Stephen, for tuning in. Merry Christmas to you and your family as well. And you gave me the one word to describe yourself, Diane, as persistent.
Correct.
Why that word?
Well, growing up, my grandmother would frequently say to my father, he was very stubborn. And his response was always, I'm not stubborn, I'm persistent. And then she would tell me that I was just like my father. So I decided that rather than think of myself as stubborn, I am persistent as well. And the truth is that when I set my mind to do something, generally, I'm able to accomplish it. And for that persistence, I'm very grateful.
I love it. You know, we need to have certain words to describe ourselves. And I get a lot of people during this year that say, Miss Liz, why that question? That's a hard one. I can't give you one word. And they're like, okay, kind, caring. I'm like, no, dig deeper. I want a deep tea from you guys. And I think, Diane, you serve a really strong deep tea. And I'm really honored to have you on this platform and have you share your story out there. So for anybody that would like a Christmas gift, go ahead and grab a copy of this book. You know, let's get it into all the homes because that's what she wants to see in 5 years. Let's make it this year, right? We have a couple more days before the new year starts. Let's make miracles happen, you know?
Well, thank you.
That movie, the Miracles of Christmas? No.
Miracle on 34th Street?
Yes, that is one of my favorites.
Mine too.
Yeah, I love it. I just love Christmas gatherings and bringing people together in that. So Diane, any final words that you have for the listeners today?
No, I just wish you all happy holidays and a wonderful 2024, a better 2024 for everyone. And I'm very grateful that you've had me on the show and it was really lovely to meet you.
Well, same here. I just love meeting incredible people. And who knows where 2024 might go. We might make some pajamas together, Diane.
I think that would be lovely.
We'll make some cookbooks, some pajamas. Who knows? We'll even make some hot chocolate with some marshmallows on top.
We'll just create an entire industry.
Right? We'll just work all together and just make it all well together. It's been a pleasure. And I really am honored to have you close up this year. You know, what better way to close up tea time than have somebody that is celebrating the holidays and getting the message out there that it's okay to bring more than just one treat to the table. You know, Miss Liz loves treats and I love different kinds of teas and all of that good stuff. And, you know, and sometimes a nice, good, warm tally also during the holiday seasons. You just never know what it'll bring you. So again, Diane, I want to thank you for joining me. I want to thank all my listeners and viewers out there. It has been a blast. We have done 161 shows this year.
Oh my gosh.
And That's it awesome. Has been incredible. I have gotten to meet so many different people, and Diane, you are one of them. So let's stay connected. Let's keep sharing, and let's keep spilling tea together, and let's make a difference in 2024.
Sounds like a plan.
And I will see everybody. Reunion show. Check out Miss Liz's YouTube channel. It is a free event. Donations can be given to Miss Liz through my website at www.misslizsteatimes.com. That is my gift to all of my guests this year. We are bringing back over 85 guests, 18 countries. Let's do it big. Let's gather and let's make a difference for everybody out there. And again, let's wrap up 2023 with a big bang and keep sharing your teas and let's make a difference. And use thank words. use the words to spill your tea out there. So thank you so much. Diane, don't leave. We're just going to wrap it up over here.
Okay.